This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome. This is Making Yourself at Home, radio show and podcast,
where we can listen to wonderful stories from many migrants in New Zealand and learn from their experience.
Good morning, Taranaki. We are here making ourselves at home with Elena from Romania, Brian from the U.S., and our special guest Sharon, also from the United States.
Yes, good morning, good morning. I'm so happy to be here today. It's another Monday, 11 a.m., and I'm so excited to have our guest today, Sharon, who is originally from America, from the U.S., from Schenectady, New York.
Say that right, Elena.
Yes, almost.
No, not even almost.
Okay, so what is it?
Schenectady.
Schenectady, yes.
Very good.
Oh, thank you. And just to say a little bit words about Sharon, I know Sharon for a few years already. She's a very dear friend of mine, and I'm so happy to have a chat with her today, with her and Brian. Sharon moved to New Zealand from Cambodia in 2003, chasing her dream to work as a midwife. And she and her husband Dave have three kids, Adam, Sarah, and Will. And after some years away, they are now back living in Opunaki. What great is for us, for Taranaki, to have you back, Sharon.
It's wonderful to be back.
Yes. And Sharon has helped women give birth all over the world, from U.S. to Tonga, to the Peruvian, Amazon, and West Africa. And she's super passionate about her Fano Center care and loves sharing her stories from her incredible journey. So I'm looking forward to know more about her today. So please welcome Sharon. How are you today?
Good. I'm feeling very good. Hopefully this will be a entertaining and informative hour, huh?
Yes, I'm sure it will.
I always have too much to say.
Mm-hmm. It's not too much for us. I think radio is a perfect place for people.
It's perfect for radio.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I've already met Brian only, 5 minutes ago and found out he lived in the same neighborhood as my husband in Columbus, Ohio.
Wow.
In Bexley.
Crazy. Yep. Shout out to Bexley, 43209.
Yeah. Did you go to Ohio State?
I did not. I left Columbus as soon as I could, pretty much. It's a great place to be from.
Yes, that's what Dave says. Ohio is a great place to be from.
Emphasis on from.
Nice. Ah. So when did you move from U.S. or when your journey started?
Oh, my journey of traveling or of New Zealand?
Traveling from your own country.
The first time I lived outside of the United States, I was just talking with Brian about this. My father was a Peace Corps doctor in Tonga. So we went to Tonga in 1970, and we were there till 73, and I was 7 to 10 years old and went to a Tongan school and spoke Tongan. And I went back and visited with friends and accidentally was telling them a story and said, when I was Tongan, I blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just say? So I definitely have a lot of imprinting from Tonga, I guess, about my ideas and perspectives on the world. I have a very much aligned with Tongan culture heart. So anyway, Tonga, and then back to Tennessee, and we were in Knoxville. I finished primary school or elementary school, junior high school, started university in Knoxville. And then I went to Medical College of Georgia in Augusta to study physical therapy. And it was in Augusta that I met my husband, my current husband. I was married before that. A bit of a learning curve experience there. We won't go into too much depth unless you really want to know. But I've learned to think of the difficult times in my life when it felt like shit landed on my plate.
Yeah.
That those are learning opportunities that the universe is giving me. Instead of feeling like a victim, this happened to me, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that has helped helped my perspective on life tremendously. So anyway, Augusta, Georgia, and then I was in Georgia for a while. We moved to Thompson, which is a little bit west of Augusta, and in Thompson we opened a rehab clinic for physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy. And we owned that clinic, and then I also opened a personal care home.
Wow.
And we were living in the personal care home when we had our first child. And before that, another kind of interesting little thing is when I was in Augusta, I was the live-in house manager for the Ronald McDonald House.
Yeah.
So that was a really good experience, some time that I appreciate very much about my life. And then we were living in the personal care home, managing it, still running our rehab clinic. Our first child, when I was expecting, I went to see the obstetrician that I had been going to for, you know, regular pap smears and contraceptive advice, whatever. And I walked out of that appointment thinking, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? I don't even know where to start to have a conversation with that man. He had put his arm around me after we waited like 2 hours because he was doing his second or third cesarean for the day, and they promised us all that if we waited, he'd see us. And he came in, put his arm around me, and said, don't worry, I take care of all my girls. I don't let them suffer. And he did an ultrasound, and you couldn't even see a baby yet. It was just a little sack because I was like 4 weeks from my last period. Anyway, I just thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Because I'm not looking at this. I'm not a girl. I'm not your girl. I don't need anyone to help me not suffer. You know, if suffering is part of giving birth, I'm all ready, whatever,
yeah.
You know, anyway. So that kind of started my journey to midwifery, and I found midwives in South Carolina to help me have that child and the next child. I drove 3.5 hours each way for every appointment and for labor once I was in labor and
wow.
giving birth, because they were more aligned with supporting normal. And that's what I wanted, not some other pathway that he was, yeah. So after having my children, we ended up selling our clinic to the hospital across the street, and we moved to Albany, Georgia, and we were distance site teachers for a branch of the Medical College of Georgia's physical therapy program. And it was at Albany State University, which is a historically black school. And their aim was to try to have more black students. So that's what we were doing, and with our two children. And it was during that time that I sort of realized I've got an obsession with becoming a midwife. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going to Brooklyn, New York to study midwifery. And the children were 4 and 6, our older two. And they stayed in Georgia with Dave while I studied midwifery in New York. And all my clinical work was done at two big city hospitals in the Bronx. And Dave and the kids moved up to Connecticut, which is where my parents were from, and they lived in the house that my mother grew up in, and she was back living there. So she was kind of upstairs, and they were downstairs. And after graduating from midwifery school, we headed to Cambodia to do some service work with the American Friends Service Committee, which is a Quaker organization. And they had a project where we had all of our staff were disabled Cambodian women doing outreach work in the villages and community all around Sihanoukville or Kampong Sam. And so the kids were 5 and 7 or 6 and 8, around that age.
Wow.
So they just kind of non-schooled for 2.5 years. When my husband, we were looking for a nanny to take care of the kids during the day while we were at work, and his only requirement that was non-negotiable was that whoever we hired spoke no English.
Wow.
And I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, but you know, we hired Sarom, she's amazing, she was 19 years old, and the kids learned Khmer so fast. Yeah.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, one of the fun, we'd heard stories about our kids from all over town. She definitely worked for her pay, Sarom. And the kid, yeah, one story was our oldest, Adam, teaching the monks on the beach about Pokemon cards and trading Pokemon cards at the beach with the monks. And they played with monkeys down at a restaurant on the beach and rode their bikes down there. And one day I was in town, and this man that I didn't even know came up to me and said, "You owe me $32.12. And I was like, "What?" And he said, "Your children keep coming down to my restaurant, and they get drinks, and they don't pay for them."
Wow.
So they were keeping a tab. So Cambodia to New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, it's
so that's the story up to here.
So what year was it when you got to New Zealand?
We got here January 2003.
2003, okay. And directly to Taranaki?
Yes, we came to Taranaki from Cambodia, and three kids. By then, we had adopted a little boy in Cambodia. Mm-hmm. So they went to school in Stratford at Stratford Primary School, and I worked there as a midwife.
Is the job how you found Taranaki?
Yes. We had come here for a holiday in 2002. And we were thinking about living here. My husband's quite a bit older than me, so it was kind of like where we're going to go from Cambodia would be where I wanted to work, since he was going to be retired or semi-retired by then, and he'd be the stay-at-home parent.
Father.
Yeah. He did end up getting registered as a physio and working part-time in Stratford while the kids were at school. But if anything happened at school and they needed to be picked up, he was the one, you know. He's amazing.
But
it was – so in 2002, I'd come to New Zealand, and I'd gone to a New Zealand College of Midwives conference in Dunedin that year. To kind of get a feel for, is New Zealand where I want to go? Because I had heard the best things about midwifery work, or the kind of way that midwifery care is done in the Netherlands and New Zealand. And those were kind of the two places that I was thinking that we might go.
Yeah.
But New Zealand, I guess it felt a little bit more at home here, even though I'd never been to New Zealand, but I had teachers from New Zealand when I was a kid in Tonga.
Nice.
Headmasters at our primary school from New Zealand. And so, yeah, and it, of course, they speak English here, which I thought would be handy because I didn't speak Dutch. And we liked the idea of more rural lifestyle, not quite so, yeah. And when we came here in 2002, I interviewed at like 7 different hospitals around the North and South Island. And I visited other places as well that I hadn't arranged an interview. And I had gotten offered a job in Wellington. So all the paperwork had been sent to me in Cambodia to accept this position in Wellington. And I just figured, well, I'll have to start someplace like that, and then eventually I'll get a rural lifestyle place to live with a family that's kind of the dream.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there with the paperwork for Wellington, and I thought, I'm just going to look one last time at this internet cafe in Cambodia that I was on and just search for New Zealand jobs and make sure nothing else pops up that
it's more interesting,
is more enticing, you know, before I sign this paperwork and send it back. And an advertisement popped up for the Elizabeth R. Maternity Unit that was in Stratford. And I had actually traveled through, and I'd stopped at Taranaki Base, had a tour around there on the weekend, and the midwife who toured around, you know, gave me a look around there, said, go to this little unit in Stratford. And so she had me meet up with a midwife, and we'd stayed at an Airbnb, and I just thought at the time, well, this is what I'd like to eventually land in a place like this. You know? Well, they had an ad up for looking for a midwife for 6 months while their facility midwife was on maternity leave. And if you like it here, there's room to stay and be an LMC in the community. And I was like,
perfect.
Holy.
Exactly.
I won't
what
swear
you
again. I already swore once. But yeah, like, wow.
It's public radio. It's okay.
Is it? I'm trying to, like,
make,
clean up my language.
Make yourself at
I keep
home
telling
today,
all
right?
the parents that I take care of, you know, when your kids get in trouble at school for swearing, you're going to feel really bad about it because they learned it from you.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get the teachers to put you in detention instead of the kids. But so that's, I was like, oh, my gosh, perfect. That's the dream. So, yeah, we ended up coming straight from Cambodia to Stratford, where we lived, and I worked for 12 years, and I ended up managing the unit there. It had got it changed hands because of change in the ownership of the whatever. And anyway, it's a long story that got very difficult, and the unit ended up having to close while I was the manager. And so the political stuff around that was extremely difficult, to the point that I decided to leave Taranaki for a while. And I won't go into too much detail because it's a long, difficult story. But so we left Taranaki. And by then, the kids were all grown up. We'd been there 12 years. And so it was just Dave and I, and we moved up to Helensville, which has a lovely little primary birthing unit, you know, like the same that I'm, I like. My midwifery, I guess, approach or philosophy is that I became a midwife to support normal birth, whenever that's reasonably possible. And so I'm very grateful for medical care and intervention when it's needed. And I learned a lot in the big hospital in the Bronx about medicalized care. It wasn't exactly what I was looking for as far as what kind of midwife I thought I had been called to be. So over the years in New Zealand, I've done more and more home birth. But saying that, I'm happy to help women birth at the hospital, especially when there's a medical need for that. But sometimes it's their preferred place to birth because they've been conditioned to believe that that's safer than at home. I had somebody I met the other day. They were from South America, and we were just standing in line together, and we got talking about birth, and they were both engineers. And she said, oh, I'd be way too scared to birth in the, you know, at home. I'd want to be at the hospital just for safety. And I said, well, if you knew what I knew, you know, you'd consider home birth as the safest place to be if you don't have a really good reason to be at the hospital.
And it's so good to have, you know, that people are aware of these things, you know, so it's good to talk
about.
Yeah,
well, the thing is that we have conditioned women in our culture to believe that the hospital is the safest place to birth. Mm. My experience is that if you are a relatively healthy, normal person, and you are interested in birthing the way Mother Nature designed, the hospital is the least likely place to have a normal, natural birth. You are much more likely to have interventions that you may later wonder why you had them or be in a position of feeling like, why did that happen? Anyway, it's a topic that I could talk about for hours.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't ever want to feel like if I'm transferring to the hospital that I'm going to enemy territory. I'm not feeling that way.
Yeah.
And I don't want the women to feel that way either. I'm going to the hospital because we need the services that they can provide. And I want to be aware of when they are needed early enough that we can get them in appropriate ways, in a, you know, timely ways to avoid an outcome that could have been prevented.
Yeah. It's so amazing, I think, to have, you know, somebody like you to make women realize that birth is a beautiful thing. Like, for example, for me, you know, when I gave birth in Romania, I gave birth at the hospital. And as you know, maybe, you know, in Romania, we are also talked to have cesarean, you know, not natural birth.
Right.
So it's quite challenging for us to say that we want to give birth natural.
Well, and in the hospital, it may be almost impossible.
Yeah. And here in New Zealand, I think it's more, it's very beautiful that when you give birth, it's better to give birth naturally.
Well, that being said, the recent cesarean section rate for Taranaki that I read just in the last few days is 37%.
Wow.
Which is good, right?
Oh, it's terrible.
Is it terrible?
It's absolutely 37% cesarean section rate is way too high, and I'm not swearing again. The World Health Organization, I think, says it should be somewhere between 5 and 12%.
Wow.
So it's way too high.
Yes.
So there's something happening that needs to be addressed. But unfortunately, I think that the women accessing care are normalizing what's happening in their expectation. And they, you know, this, I think the induction rate is 30%. It's continues to rise. And I don't think if you asked Mother Nature that she would say 30% of women need to be induced.
Yeah.
It's just things are off the rails.
Right?
That's my take on it.
I would love to have you as a midwife, but obviously now
we'll
I
get pregnant again.
Yeah, maybe it's not my age anymore to do babies. But
I'm sure I've had women older than you, Alina.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, maybe then I think about it.
Yeah.
If I had the proper hardware, I'd get your business card.
Well, you know, I have a lot of men who say I was their midwife, you know. I run into them all the time, the men, I'm not just taking care of the woman, I'm taking care of the whole family. And one of my passions about midwifery is that I think, or I believe that how babies come into the world has an impact on them for the rest of their life.
Yes, it has.
And actually, I brought a little book that I have written, put together, that I give to all the women I take care of. And there's a quote in here. I'm still friends with the woman who wrote this, but I read it before I went to study midwifery, and it was kind of the thing that put the nail, the last nails in the coffin for me to study midwifery. That's probably not a good, but
it's It's amazing. So you wrote a book.
You know, even, well, yeah.
It's amazing.
I give the copy to all the women. Okay, so Suzanne Arms wrote a book years ago in the 70s, I think, called, late 70s, Immaculate Deception. And it was about the maternity system and the deception of birthing. And it turns out that it was written about things that happened in a hospital called Kings County Hospital in Brooklyn. And the school I ended up studying in is attached, like there's a hallway. The school building is attached to Kings County Hospital. Mm-hmm. So I used to go through Kings County Hospital mailing cards and books and presents to my kids who weren't with me, mm-hmm. like down in the mail room in the basement of Kings County Hospital. But anyway, Suzanne wrote this, and I'm still friends with her. She's now in her 80s. But it says, if we are to create a nonviolent world where respect and kindness replace fear and hatred, we must begin with how we treat each other at the beginning of life. For this is where our deepest patterns are set. From these roots grow fear and alienation or love and trust. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. I gotta, this is, it's like a spiritual calling, I guess, to be a midwife. And it's my way of trying to contribute to a world that becomes more connected, more compassionate, more respectful, more loving.
Yeah.
And the bonding that I'm aware can or cannot happen at birth with the mother, the father, other siblings, grandparents, aunties, whoever's going to be involved in this child's life, I, from the moment I meet the family, I'm doing everything I can to engage everyone in the arrival of this new person that's coming into their family so that that child can be essentially nurtured with love and respect in ways that they can fulfill their potential, that they can have mana, and that they can, a friend of mine who's a doula was telling me a few years ago that she was remembering being a little girl, and apparently she was kind of mischievous and acting out or whatever, and she was being scolded by her grandmother, who said, Sophia, you're just full of yourself. And here she is at 40 years old talking to me about this memory. And she said, Sharon, if I'm not full of myself, who am I supposed to be full of? And so my goal is for every child to grow up being full of themselves. And so that's, you know, what I'm trying to do is by respecting the mother and the father and listening, that I'm here to listen and give information about whatever risk factors might come up or what benefits we have to this or what are our protocols and what's the rationale behind those protocols, that they have as much of that information as possible to make informed decisions for themselves or informed choices. And it's not just about informed consent, because consent has come from outside of you. It's actually, how do I feel? What do I need? What do I want? What's going to help me heal from my past birth trauma? Because that, I've found, is a powerful opportunity. And I've had mothers have a positive birth experience. And it could be that, well, I'm thinking of one woman who had had two cesareans. She wanted to try to have a normal birth, but as labor started, she knew she needed to be at the hospital because something wasn't right. And we got to the hospital. She had a third cesarean, but, and I try to not use the word but from the nonviolent communication. It's and, because if you say but, it negates everything.
It negates, right? Yeah.
Negates everything you just said. She told me afterwards that after her first two children, she was just happy to go back to work, happy to send them off to school, do their thing. She really was telling me she didn't have a very strong maternal bond with her first two children. But after the third one, because she was listened to and supported, even though she ended up with another cesarean, because the first two cesareans made a situation that necessitated it, she not only bonded better with her baby than she had the previous two, but she bonded with the first two.
Amazing.
In a whole new level. Wow. Than she had before that. Because it's like this maternal instinct was honored
was
in her.
Right?
Yes.
It's so amazing. And I feel like that, you know, like with my first child, you know, she was born naturally. And the second one, the doctor said, because of the first one was a very traumatic birth, I had to do cesarean. Mm. So I feel that because I had the chance to give natural birth, I think my connection with my kids is quite powerful now.
Different, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there was a woman I took care of from South Africa, where it's similar to Romania or, you know, Brazil or all these countries, Mexico, that their cesarean rates may be 85-90%.
Wow. Percent. It is like that. Romania,
yeah.
It is like
it's
that.
It's because it's 90%. A money-making business, mm. And it's convenient for the doctors.
I
wanted to ask you what potentially could be the motivating factor for higher rates than expected, whether it was a hammer and nail, or doctors have a hammer and they're always looking for a certain nail to fix it with, or if it's actually financially driven. Sounds
well,
like you're willing to talk
Zealand,
about it.
In New Zealand, I'm not convinced it's, quote, financially driven, why the cesarean rates are climbing and have gotten to the point that they've gotten here. But the way I see it is that they've got fishing nets to catch and, you know, find risk factors. And they've gotten so good at their fishing nets, you know, they're so big with such tiny holes that almost every woman, they catch something. Mm. Mm. And once they catch a risk factor, then they say, oh, you've got, you know, this or that, or, you know, whatever, your baby's too big, your baby's too small, you've had a previous cesarean, so you've got these risk factors, and that the system is designed to avoid a bad outcome from that risk factor. So then the interventions, recommendations for interventions start. And the women don't even realize that they're recommendations. They just think it's like the law, that they have to do what they're told. And they're looking at it from a public health perspective about what should happen, so that, for example, recently there's a study that's just come out that says for one baby's life to be saved with all the post-dates inductions that are being done, because everybody thinks you have to be induced before 42 weeks, right? Because your risk of a stillborn baby doubles, and nobody wants a stillborn baby. Well, that when you look at that double on a line, you go from this tiny little amount of maybe 3 out of 1,000 to 5 or 6 out of 1,000. So you still have less than 1% of, and we don't really have all the information about where those numbers are coming from and who was being studied and what. Were they from places where they were checking their blood pressure throughout the, you know, all the different things that we're trying to check for? So, of course, people think, when are you going to be induced? You know, whatever. Well, the recent research said that we have to induce 1,850 women to save one life. Well, all of those women who are induced have had a birth that was... The reins for that birth process were taken away from the woman, and it was a medicalized event. That it wasn't, they didn't go into spontaneous labor and they weren't supported in the ways that help facilitate a normal, natural birth. And a lot of those women are being traumatized. That we, in New Zealand, it's 1 out of 3 women are reporting being traumatized by their birth experience. And that's totally unnecessary. You know, birth, I think of it as carrying a lot of power. And that power can end up being the most positive experience of a woman's life, where she accesses power that she's not even aware she has, but she digs down really deep into herself to birth her baby. And you come out of that experience of birthing that way feeling like you can do fucking anything.
Yes, yes.
It's, and you're going to be like that mother bear mother who's like, don't touch my children. Yeah. Don't do that to my children. And society is trying to, I think, for the most part, raise human beings who are happy to conform. Mm.
Yeah.
And I am saying, I want you as a mother to know your child, know yourself, be aware of what you feel is best for your child, and speak up for them. Don't just let the experts tell you what your child needs or doesn't need. Listen to your child. And so I'm starting that process of attunement with your baby. And there was recently a movie called Seen that was shown as a fundraiser for Flourish. It's a documentary made in Australia. It's brilliant about how important it is for children to be seen and raised in a way that they're acknowledged as human beings. Our children don't just come here to live out our agenda for them. Lord knows I can tell you, my children are not living out my agenda for them. I feel like sometimes I've hopped on the Starship Enterprise and they're taking me at warp speed into places I never thought I would go, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel, obviously, really strongly about, you know, and the way that we do that is by the mother's well-being and the mother feeling seen, knowing that her wishes were heard, respected, that there wasn't coercion to get her to conform and comply with recommendations that went totally against her wishes, that she is acknowledged, and that sometimes, even though there's a recommendation that she do something or not do something, we respect what she says she needs. And it might be different than that. And that's the individualized care within a system that's written from a public health perspective.
Yeah.
To save that one baby out of 1,850 babies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to induce that many women to save one baby. But what have we done to those 1,850 women?
Yeah, it's quite a powerful message that you are bringing to the people in the world, especially to the women, you know, so I think it's so important that your voice is heard, and I'm so happy that you are today at the radio and saying that to all the women. And I think it's so good, for example, like you said, like in other parts of the world, like, for example, in Romania, you know, when cesarean is like 90% of the population, is there anything that attracted you to be a midwife in New Zealand?
Well, New Zealand has a reputation of having the number one maternity care system in the world.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
That's the reputation that we have. Now, since I've been in New Zealand, working here for as long as I have, 22 years, I'm now helping some of the babies that birthed with me have their own babies.
Yeah, how is that for you?
I mean, it's amazing. It's apparently, I'm the midwife grandmother. they call me at the hospital because I'm like, this is another one. I was her midwife when she was born.
Yeah, yeah.
So you better be nice to her because if you're not, I'm going to get, like I'm the mother bear for the women too. So New Zealand has this reputation. And since I came here, I have seen the influence of the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's seeping into our system. Mm. And it's, I think, a fear of litigation, although we don't even have litigation here, but not in the ways like in the United States. But there's still that, well, if something happens, the system will get criticized for not jumping in sooner to do more, sooner. But the problem is that so much is being done too much too soon that it's sabotaging things, and it's also very detrimental. Like for these other things that I'm talking about, often at the hospital, you know, we've got a live baby, it's got good Apgar scores, the mother, yeah, she had a induction, and yeah, she had, you know, we had to pull the baby out, cut an episiotomy, she did have a postpartum hemorrhage, but she's okay, the baby's okay. Mm. Job well done, walk out the door. Well, guess what? That was not a job well done.
Yeah.
That woman is traumatized. And I've, in my book, there's another thing in here about what fear in labor does, what the impact is on mothers. And there's a little story about research here. And I'll just read it. It's like two paragraphs. Mm. I heard about some research that was done on rats that went like this. Not that we're rats, but sometimes we are on those little wheels going around and around in circles. Mm-hmm. So there were two groups of rats that were studied. The control group of mother rats was left alone to birth their babies in their cages undisturbed. The other group of rats had straw soaked with cat urine or cat piss put into their cages when they were in labor giving birth. After the rat babies were born, the researchers studied the mother rats' mothering behaviors. There were two behaviors the mother rats demonstrated that were considered, quote, good rat mothering behaviors. They were, one, back arching to get their, you know, nipples, teats out to where the baby rats could easily access them to nurse. In other words, invite their babies to nurse or facilitate that. And the second was licking their babies. So good rat mothers did those two things. That's what they decided. So they observed that both groups were observed, and the number of good rat mothering behaviors were counted. The rats that had labored birthed undisturbed by cat urine-soaked straw demonstrated much more, quote, good rat mothering behaviors than did the mothers that had been terrified during their labor and birth. Mm. Now, this is, I think, at the root of a lot of our society's problems.
Yeah.
Most of our mothers birthing in the hospitals are scared.
Yes.
You know, we're focusing on all the things that can go wrong, and we're telling them, you know, what needs to happen or not happen to avoid a bad outcome. And so it's disguised as safety. Mm. And it's meant as safety. Like I don't think anyone who has worked on all these policies and procedures or, you know, all the things that can be done to check this and check that, I don't think anybody is ill-meaning. Unfortunately, the machine has gotten so big, it's once you're on the treadmill, you can't get off. And you're heading deeper, deeper, deeper into this machine that is going to chew you up and spit your baby out.
Yeah. And that's quite sad,
I'm sure that I'm probably going to hear back from some people who are listening to this, but I'm used to that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm living with stage 4 cancer, and at the moment I'm well. It was found by accident. And I feel like I don't know how much time I've got left to get this message out to the world.
Mm.
And it's important. For me, it's...
It is very important.
Very important.
Yeah, it is, and for all the women in the world.
Yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time to be here and sharing the message here with us. It's extraordinarily important.
Yeah. I'm a bit out there, as you can see, and I ruffle feathers. Mm. I have ruffled a few feathers, yes, including in New Zealand.
Yeah, and I was just reading now about cesarean birth rate in Romania, and it's not 90, it's 52%, and it says it's increasing. And I think this is also what I experienced during that time, that I was so afraid, and everybody around me, they... because I also have an eye, you know, I have my glasses, and my mother had some challenges with her eye, so she didn't give birth naturally. I was not aware of what is happening and how it is to give birth naturally. So I was very lucky that I met one lady who gave birth naturally, and she told me it was an amazing experience. So I changed my doctor when I was pregnant 8 months with my daughter. And I changed to a doctor who was doing natural birth because there was nobody in Romania who can...
Is that your older or younger?
My older, yeah.
Your older. Yeah, but you still ended up with a cesarean.
I ended up with cesarean for the second baby.
Oh, but the first one you'd had a...
Normal, yeah. Natural birth, yeah. And I met my doctor in the night I gave birth.
I have had women change to me at 41 weeks. One woman not too long ago called me on a Saturday and said, I think I need to change midwives. And I said, well, if you're 41 weeks, I probably need to come talk to you this afternoon. So I spent a few hours with her and her husband that afternoon. And meeting me, they wanted to have a home birth. It was their second child. And before 7 in the morning, she had called in labor, and she had a home birth at 2 in the afternoon, less than 24 hours after she
Amazing.
Changed midwives.
Wow.
So I think you're going to go into labor when you feel safe and when you feel seen and you can relax. And I'm trying to think of all the important things to tell you because I've got, 10 more minutes? But... the hormones for women to birth naturally, those are made within your body, and it's a dance that's happening between your baby and you, and it's not in your brain that you think about. It's in your reptilian brain that is what's controlling things like your breathing, your heart rate, your digestion, your liver function, your kidney function. You don't go to school and learn how to make those things work. Well, your reproductive system about birth is similar. I say when you buy a laptop, it comes with certain things already programmed in it. Well, when you were born, you already had the program for birth. It was in there.
Yeah.
You don't have to learn it. You actually need to relax and surrender and trust. And you need to feel, in order to labor well and birth well, you need to feel safe, not observed, respected. There needs to be privacy, dim lights, because melatonin is one of the things, I always get that word. Is that the right one for the hormone that rises at nighttime?
Serotonin.
Melatonin.
Melatonin and oxytocin is the biggie. Oxytocin is the love hormone, right?
Yeah.
So I tell women that you're going to labor and birth well in the same sort of situation that you felt comfortable to become sexually aroused and conceive your baby. It's the same hormonal process that needs to arise and come up. And I mean, so wherever you felt, so is that going to be in a hospital room with people screaming in the other rooms because they're screaming through a birth, where they've got you on a monitor to check your blood pressure, listen to the baby's heart rate, a IV line going, you're being induced, there's lights,
fluorescent lights
aimed on you, people are coming in.
Sounds very
doing
relaxing. No natural light.
To check on progress. I mean, is that where you would have been comfortable to relax and conceive this baby?
Yeah.
Probably not.
That's right. And it's also very interesting because just recently, because I'm doing the cranio course, I was teaching my kids all the time that they came into the world because we tried to explain them how they were conceived, you know, that it was a race, and the one, you know, the worm who was first on the egg
wins the race.
So I found out through the cranio course that it's not a race. It's more like a dance, like what you said. So it's a dance.
The conception.
And also
apparently the egg has preferences and the egg chooses.
Exactly. The egg is choosing, not, you know, it's not a race.
Anyway.
Which we have to teach our kids, yeah. Anyway.
What you were just talking about there at the end, you brought up a number of topics that touched on what I was thinking throughout the conversation was, it seems like the medicalization of childbirth has just moved towards a forgetting of the evolution of humans, the fact
no
that
respect
we've given, you know, humans have been able to give birth outside of hospitals for how many thousands of years.
Right. And of course, some of those babies didn't survive.
Of course.
The women that are birthing now are not the products of those babies that died, are they?
Yeah. Mm.
They're the products of the babies that survived.
Mm.
And we haven't been doing all this medicalization stuff of birth until the last maybe two generations, two, maybe three. And you're right. Like, they just, we've got this wonderful, powerful medical system that has what's when a pirate takes your
commandeered?
Yeah, commandeered birth, and nobody sees any value in doing it the old way.
Mm. Right.
Nobody is looking at what could I benefit from supporting my body and my baby to birth the way that they're supposed to. I'm sorry, I think it's a supposed to.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, there are times when there are problems, but we are creating a lot of the problems that are happening in birth by our early interventions and our sabotaging of the women's belief in the value of their normal process and trust. They don't trust themselves.
Right.
They're terrified of birth.
Mm.
And, you know, this whole thing about pain, well, yes, most humans would describe it as painful. We don't have a word for something that is such extreme exertion that is so uncomfortable but normal with a positive outcome. We don't have a word for that, so we use this word pain.
Mm.
And really, that, I just, if everyone knew what I knew from my 25 years of supporting women to birth, you would be much more skeptical of what you're being told has to happen.
Mm. And I think it's so important to have you today, you know, to that other women are listening to this, and just the knowledge that you can give birth, you know, naturally.
Yeah,
There is maybe pain, which I also experienced, but I think what is coming afterwards is much more powerful than the pain you had when you were giving birth.
Yeah, and when you get an epidural, it's usually at this peak of the pain, right? And you just think you can't cope any longer, and you end up with an epidural. And I'm not against epidurals when they're really needed, but when it's just a normal process, I mean, hopefully I've taken care of a woman through the pregnancy to the point that she has some confidence in herself. But I warn them or whatever that everybody gets to the point where they think they can't do it. And usually when you get to that point, you're almost there.
You're probably
your body's going to start pushing in the next 10 minutes or,
that's
you know,
it.
Soon. And then you're going to have a baby. And that's your pain relief.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this beautiful baby, and you feel euphoric. I mean, the I can't even explain this feeling. It's the highest high.
Yeah, it is. It is the highest high.
Yeah. It is like your oxytocin levels 20 minutes after a normal undisturbed birth peak at 19 times higher than you'll ever experience any other time in your life.
Yes.
And this is when you should be holding your baby, looking at your baby, bonding with your baby. It's strong, powerful. It is not insignificant. It is the most significant thing about life on earth.
Exactly. Thank you. I think
besides the just the culture of fear that, you know, that's being developed and the institutional overreach and medicalization of childbirth, do you think that the sedentary lifestyle is actually contributing to some relative increase in the necessity to have interventions in childbirth?
My immediate reaction to that question is that people who are very sedentary are very passive. And they're probably much more likely to have the mindset that it's not their responsibility, that they, and they don't have a strong sense of power over their circumstances. So they're probably much more likely to just accept whatever, you know, they walk into the hospital, they put the gown on that says hospital property all over it. They become hospital property. They get their ID band on, and they're put on the monitor, which is like being tethered to the bed. And they become this passive birthing person who the medical interventions, and I mean, there's such a thing as bed dystocia. Like, we talk about shoulder dystocia, that babies' heads come out and the shoulders get stuck. Well, being on a bed flat on your back does not allow your pelvis to move and open in the ways that it needs to a lot of the time to birth. I'm looking at the time, but there's one last story. Actually, a woman I took care of who worked for Radio New Zealand, because she did some stories about me, had a home birth with me. And after her birth, she said, you know, I had my first two babies in the hospital, and I didn't know this until after my home birth with you, Sharon, but if I ever had to, not that I would choose to, but if I ever had to, I could go into a cave all by myself and birth my baby. And I thought, that's what I want every woman to know. I'm not recommending going into caves and birthing by yourself. I think I trained as a midwife because I want to support women and hold space for that to happen. And I want to be aware of when we're not following a normal pathway. There's umpteen million normal pathways, but sometimes things do go off the tracks, and there are things that we can do about it to avoid a bad outcome, and I'm all for doing it. That's much less of the time than is happening right now.
Women empowerment.
Yes.
Really.
I think we should have another show with you.
To get back into your travel travel stories.
Yeah, we talked about birthing and the Amazon jungle and Tonga.
We didn't talk about that.
So Benin, West Africa, and Mexico. Yeah, I've learned from many people. Many people.
So you're more than welcome to be a return guest.
We're looking forward to see you again.
Yeah.
Always happy to come. See if your response to this is good or not good.
Let's see how it goes.
I'm not afraid of ruffling some feathers, but I try to do it, you know, in good ways.
Spoken like a true fellow American.
Such a pleasure to have two Americans today with me.
Yeah, and even if you have opposing political views, we can still have conversations.
Of course
you
we
know,
can.
It is...
It's a free world.
We can be
right?
respectful of each other and listen. And, you know, probably we'd be surprised that we have much more in common than we realize.
Yeah, I think so. Great conversation. Thank you so much, Sharon, for sharing your story today. It was wonderful.
Thank you for inviting me.
As always, as I know you. And, you know, talking about birth, it's a beautiful subject. So thank you for sharing that, and looking forward to see you again. in another show.
Well, I'll come back if you want me.
Thank you, Sharon, and thank you to our listeners out in Taranaki and beyond. This has been Making Yourself at Home on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. Your voice, your choice. Get out there and meet some midwives.
Yeah, get out there and give some births.
Yeah.
Now, after this discussion, maybe I will make another baby. Who
Empower
knows?
Women. Take
thank
care, everybody.
So
have a great week.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to be part of our show, please contact us on our Facebook page, Making Yourself at Home.
We would love to hear your story. You can download our show from Spotify, Access Radio Taranaki website, or Apple Podcasts.
Kia ora. This is B Ori Global, probably the most influential Bisaya music radio show in the world. I'm your host, Freemail Sugdanta.
Bagong kabuntagon, ako nga nahandong ang mga hanib sa panahon. Ang kahayag sa adlaw, kinimawi mipukaw sa kagahapon na nakatagpilaw. Akong nahanduraw sa tumang kamingaw, ang mga hiyas nga nangahanaw. Ay nang punuan nga kanikataguan sa mga nagdulang kabataan. Ay nang kalanggaman nga kanhikataguyan, ay nang kabulakan nga akong kahagkan. Ang damgo na hanaw sa pagsalup sa adlaw, ug mihulit ang kauhaw. Kanindot ang lumon, kanindot balikon, sa panahong ni Pahiyon. Aron akong ma-
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.